Chapter 3. How You Remind Me of Some Spring. Sounds like it went really well, is Will's verdict the next morning. They're all out on the pitch, Nate and Beard having a small slap fight over some defensive drills while the team warms up. Ted takes the chance to consult to his expert in the field, or on the pitch, over here, while he's setting up the sports drinks. The only time I ever met a guy's kids, he wanted me to babysit them as well as... Will makes a very upsetting gesture that makes Ted want to find this guy and give him a very strong piece of his mind. I thought so too, he says instead, although he does make a note to suggest that, if Will ever wants to talk to the doc or anything, he's part of the team and can always be provided with that service. He'll have to figure out a better way to phrase it first. And the rules, the thing where... It's not weird, right? Going slow? Will picks up the crate of water bottles and sets them gingerly on the bench, and Ted moves around to the other side to help him put them out. Because two guys have to have sex on the first date? No, says Ted reflexively, before saying... Well, yes, I suppose, yeah, that's kind of the stereotype, isn't it? There's not really any right or wrong way to do this, you know, Will says. Do you want to see him again? Ted nods. Very much. Okay, says Will. And do you want to have sex with him? Very much, Ted admits. Because it does feel like an admission. Last night, when he was talking with Trent in the kitchen, all the stuff they'd agreed to had sounded smart. Most of it still does. Parameters to give them some room. I guess I just don't know what slowly ought to mean in this particular context. Fortunately, you can always ask, says Will. Only a little bit making fun, but he's probably earned it. Okay. So I should just call him and ask him out again and casually drop the fact that I'm ready when he is, so to speak? Call? Says Will, with all the devastating pity of the young. Like a phone call? You really are from another century, aren't you? Ted huffs. Give me a break here, Casanova. The last time I was out on the dating scene, The Matrix was just coming out. Will opens his mouth, probably to tell Ted that he wasn't even alive back then, which will necessitate that Ted walk into the sea, or whatever nearest large body of water London has. That big river everybody spells weird, probably. Just, I don't want to push, like you said. Sounds to me like you might want to pull, Will says. And Ted's been here long enough to know that that's very dirty and probably not workplace friendly. But it's kind of nice, too, knowing there's somebody else who speaks this language Ted's just starting to learn. Will quickly adds, sorry, but yeah, just talk to him. Call him. Even. Ask him out and see where that leads. And it wouldn't be weird? Ted asks. Honestly, says Will, collapsing the empty crate and putting it under the table, the weirdest thing is that you want to date him at all. Unfortunately, a date per se is not happening anytime soon. The whole week is crazy, and the next one too, scheduling-wise. They're playing two home games and two away games to make up for the long break they had. Arsenal's just got one home and one away, but that game is in Newcastle, which is apparently very far. Oh no, like 2 whole hours? Ted asks, pulling some of the leftover pasta sauce out of the fridge to heat up and pour over the penne he's got bubbling on the stove. 5 and a half, I'll have you know, Trent says, his voice echoing a little on speakerphone. And you're supposed to commiserate with me, Ted, not mock me. I'm gonna keep telling you until you get it into your head. You live on a tiny little island that's smaller than half the states in America, Ted says. And there aren't even any teams y'all play against in Scotland. So this all just sounds like whining to me. I can't believe I thought dating you would be a good idea, Trent grumbles. Well, we haven't been on a date yet, technically, Ted says, sticking the sauce in the microwave. Which reminds me, I'd like to rectify that sometime soon. Would you now, says Trent, his tone shifting. And just like that, Ted's getting hard, right in the middle of his kitchen on a Saturday night. And what would you like to do on this date? I've got a few ideas, he says, heart beating faster. Just then, there's a knocking sound on Trent's end, and somebody yelling about getting their arses on the bus. And I would very much like to hear them, but we're about to leave for the stadium, Trent says. He does sound bummed about it, but we should resume this conversation later. You're a mean man, Trent Krim, Ted says, and Trent laughs and hangs up on him. The thing is, Ted does have ideas, maybe too many, all of them vivid and urgent. He's as helpless and horny as he was at 15, jerking off twice a day and still walking around with a buzz of impatient desire in the back of his head. It's as if Trent's given him space to feel nervous and instead left Ted without a clue how to handle the want that's lodged in his throat. The only solution he can think of is Trent, getting his hands on him again, getting their bodies together again. But knowing he can't, at least not right away, is its own kind of relief. He's able to focus on the team, his guys, help Sam out with his right cross and give Danny a pep talk about missing a recent corner kick. They're working better as a team than they ever have before, sharpening themselves with each game like an axe on a whetstone. Or maybe it's one of those sharpening belts, Ted can't remember. He's proud of all of them, and even a little proud of himself. 12 months ago, none of this was even in the purview of his imagination, and now here they are, with a real shot of making Richmond the comeback story of the year. He just also really wants to get laid. It's not until the following Friday that they're back in London at the same time, and even then it's almost midnight by the time Ted drags his sorry butt up the stairs to his apartment. He dumps everything on his bed and heads straight for a shower, washing the team bus grime off of himself before changing into some flannel PJs and a t-shirt. He's achy but not tired just yet, so he collapses on the couch and turns on the TV. There's a rerun of QI on. He loves Sandy and the guy who sits next to her, with hair almost as impressive as Trent's. During the next commercial break, he gets out his phone. He's been texting Trent all day, about dumb stuff like their favorite disgusting food combinations or their views on solar energy or the ethics of elephants in circuses. He's scrolling back through their messages when the phone lights up with a call.
Trent Krim, the Independent, Ted answers, trying to match Trent's accent.
There's a long, disgusted pause. Is that really the best you can do? Ted chuckles, scrubbing his hand through his still damp hair. All right, mister, let's hear your Ted Lasso. There's a good reason I didn't attend RADA, Trent says. I take it you made it home all right? Ted shuts his eyes as he leans back into the couch. There's something pretty wonderful about having someone keep track of when he gets home. although it's hard to tell if it's just generally wonderful or specific to Trent. I did, thank you. Nice to finally be in the same city as you again, by the way. If it weren't so late, I'd ask if you wanted to come over. It feels risky to say, but he's being honest. He wants to see Trent, wants to touch him and kiss him and maybe get him horizontal for a while. He really wants to discuss the exact definitions of slow, because just this conversation is getting him half-hard in his PJs. It's actually early, by my watch, says Trent. But I'm glad you said that. Why? Did you think I'd stopped liking you between now and... He pulls the phone away and checks when the last text was. 97 minutes ago? Although, I've got to say, that Marmite and Apple thing might be a deal-breaker. That's rank hypocrisy from someone who eats peanut butter and ketchup sandwiches, says Trent. But no, I didn't mean that. Which is when Ted's doorbell rings, just like something out of a Meg Ryan rom-com. It's not much of a surprise when Ted opens the door to find Trent on the other side, wearing a long black wool coat and a red scarf, his phone already put away. Hey now, Ted says, grinning into his own phone. You shouldn't hang up on people. Trent takes a quick step inside, right into Ted's space, and kisses him hot and sharp until they're up against the wall. Ted tries and fails to kick the door closed and drops his phone, but he's too busy trying to get Trent's coat off to care much. Trent's big hands are cradling his head, turning it this way and that to kiss under his chin or down his neck, and Ted just wants to stay here for an hour or a year or so. So, he gasps as Trent scrapes his teeth along the tendon of his neck, is this some type of booty call? Not that I'm complaining. That slows Trent down, although he still got Ted pinned pretty good. No, he says after a minute. Not precisely. I'm afraid I might have got a bit carried away just now. He actually looks embarrassed, licking his lips. I really did want to see you. This honesty stuff is starting to be a real turn-on. Ted tugs at both ends of Trent's scarf, reeling him back in. Wanted to see me, huh? Is that what the kids are calling it these days? Trent gets all ruffled like an offended great blue heron that got bit by a fish. I was the one to suggest we take things slowly, he insists, resisting Ted's attempts. I didn't come here just to grope you. Well, that's a real shame, Ted says, because I've been sitting here just hoping for some groping. There's even a chapter on it in my textbook. It's always fun watching Trent's face as he tries to pick a reaction. If Ted talks fast enough, it's like one of those flip books. Ted clocks confusion, disgust, arousal, dubiousness, and affection all in a span of about 3 seconds before Trent steps back a pace. Truly, Ted, I didn't mean... And truly, says Ted, I'm saying that while I also wanted to see you and talk to you tonight, if you'd like to do that, and some groping, I wouldn't mind. He leans to the side and finally gets the door closed, then takes Trent's hand to lead him over to the couch. Guinness okay with you? He asks over his shoulder as he heads to the kitchen. Fine, says Trent, slowly sitting down while looking around the place. It's the first time he's been here, and Ted wonders if he'll have anything to say about the lack of paintings and photos on the wall, the way Henry's artwork is just taped up and not professionally framed. Ted pulls out a couple of bottles, popping the tops off with the magnetic church key on the fridge. He turns off the kitchen light and goes back to the living room. Trent takes the offered bottle. He's pulled off his scarf and coiled it up on the coffee table, but he still looks chilly. So Ted sits right next to him, putting an arm around his shoulders. His dark gray sweater is incredibly soft, and Ted finds himself petting Trent's shoulder like it's a baby kitten. Trent doesn't seem to mind. He leans right up against him, putting his free hand on Ted's thigh, which gives Ted some cause for optimism. "In the spirit of honesty," Trent says, after taking a long pull from his bottle, "I should tell you that one of the reasons I want to go slow is because otherwise I'd fuck you into the nearest mattress." Ted inhales some of his beer and nearly chokes to death, which would be a real shame if Trent has that kind of itinerary planned for them at some point down the line. "Oh, really?" he says, once he's more or less gotten his breathing under control. Trent, who leaned away from him while he was sputtering all over the place, gives him a long, kind of resigned look, like he's just now realizing that he didn't pick the smoothest of movers as a potential date tonight. "Yes, really," he says, and settles back against Ted's side. "But it's not a good idea." "It sounds like, well, no, probably it's not a good idea, but it's still making Ted feel hot all over." "I defer to your expert opinion on that one." Trent smiles at that, but he's quiet for a minute or two, clearly looking to say something. "There's an impulse, I suppose," he says finally, fingers picking at the knee of Ted's PJs. "On my part, at least, to grab what I can when it comes to you. Before you're gone." He holds up his hand, cutting Ted off before he can say anything. "I know you're likely to stay in the UK for another few seasons, at least, after Richmond wins its promotion. But it doesn't necessarily follow that any relationship you have will last that long." "Kind of pessimistic, romance-wise," says Ted. "Although, thanks for the vote of confidence, I notice you didn't say, if Richmond wins its promotion." "Oh, you could still easily fuck it up," Trent assures him, twiddling with his beer bottle the way he does with his glasses. "But my larger point is that my impulses shouldn't dictate the pace of any of this. It's far more important that you feel comfortable with how this goes." "Is sex supposed to be comfortable?" Ted asks, curious. "Because for me, it's always been a little jittery-making." "It's supposed to be something you want," says Trent pointedly. "And you think I might turn out to not actually want it," Ted guesses. "That about the size of it?" Trent takes another drink. "As wholly ridiculous as that may sound," he says, "yes." Which actually makes a little bit of sense. Ted tries thinking about this whole thing from Trent's angle, meeting a guy who was married to a woman for 20 years, who'd never dated anyone other than women, who'd needed all of Trent's heart spilled out on his own doorstep before realizing what it was Trent was asking for. Maybe there's a little cause for concern there. Fortunately, that's a problem he thinks he can solve. "Look, Trent, I don't want either of us rushing, for both our sakes. And there's things I'm not ready for, like, I still might need to work up to, anal sex." He hates the way he says it, like it's something embarrassing, But that whole chapter was kind of embarrassing. Or blowjobs, mostly because I'm kind of worried about the learning curve on that one. And I can tell you now, water sports and pony play aren't likely to ever be something I want to try. First one's gross and second one's got too many accessories. He takes a deep breath. But this past few weeks I've been, well, I've been thinking about you. A lot. In a very non-G-rated kind of way. Have you? Says Trent. It's really tough being annoyed and aroused by the same person at the same time. Yes, Trent, I have, and I can go get my textbook and show you exactly which diagrams made me think real hard at night, if you follow my drift. But if you're looking for some more empirical evidence about how much I want this, and you, I don't know what to tell you. He tries not to sound too snippy, but he's waving his bottle around and nearly spilling it on the cushions. Trent plucks it right out of Ted's hand, setting both the bottles on the coffee table next to his scarf. I am, as a matter of fact, he says, and turns back to Ted. You're what? Ted asks, but it's too late. Ted doesn't really dig on rating kisses, but this one's definitely a top five contender. Trent leans into him, puts his hand back in Ted's hair. It must be pretty messed up at this point. And Trent's so eager, like he's been as desperate as him this whole time. It's a lot, not too much, but a lot, making Ted squirm and pant and feel prickles of sweat everywhere they're touching. Which, they're touching in a bunch of places. Trent's tipped him right over, so Ted's sort of leaning against the arm of the couch with Trent on his knees, straddling Ted's thighs. This gives Ted the opportunity to finally get his hands on Trent's butt, trying to get him closer while at the same time appreciating the very nice handfuls he's got to occupy himself. So, says Trent, pulling away just far enough to suck at the hinge of Ted's jaw, which hadn't ever been a sensitive spot before, but it's certainly doing a number on him at the present moment. Do you like this? Yes, please, says Ted, shifting his hips. He's dying for friction, anything, but Trent's still so far away. Two scoops, sprinkles on top. Trent puts a hand on his chest. Ted, he says, looking skeptical. And Ted's had just about enough. So he takes Trent's other hand and presses it right down onto his dick, which has been taking a lively interest in proceedings. It's a lot more aggressive than Ted's ever been, but it's also the first time he's had an honest-to-God argument with someone about just how hard he is. There's your empirical evidence, all right, he says. Or at least he tries to, but Trent chooses that moment to give him a little squeeze, his thumb running along the buttons at the front of his pajamas. Ted squeaks out the word right just as his hips jerk up, and he's so needful. He's going crazy with Trent touching him like this, watching him, kissing him. It's not too much. It's not enough. Trent, please, come on now. But Trent's looking torn. We can go however slowly you need, he says. You shouldn't feel pressure, Ted. Well, that's one word for what I'm feeling. He gives Trent's butt a pat. Hey, listen, I trust you, and I want you to trust me, okay? I'm a grown man. You're gonna have to teach me some things, but saying no ain't one of them. This is just because you've been hard ever since I came through the door, isn't it? Trent says, but his mouth is twitching, and his thumb on Ted's dick is moving again in slow, lazy loops. "You noticed that, huh?" Ted shifts his hips again, pressing up, wanting more. "World-class journalistic work there."
"There's a lot to notice," Trent says, and scrapes his nails carefully down the length of Ted's cock.
"Oh, fuck," Ted says, tipping his head back to thump onto the arm of the couch.
"I think," says Trent thoughtfully, "that's the first time I've ever heard you say fuck."
And he gives him another squeeze, right at the head, a little bit mean about it. Ted does not mind at all. "I'm happy to say it as often as you like, if you keep on doing that."
Trent smiles, that smirky one he has for when things are all going his way.
"Say what?" he asks, his fingers tapping lightly at Ted's waistband, which is just dirty pool.
"Fuck," Ted says obediently, because he might be new at this whole gay sex thing, but he knows positive reinforcement when it's promising to jerk him off.
"Very good," says Trent, as he shoves his hand down past the waistband to curl around Ted's cock. He doesn't have a lot of room like that, but that doesn't slow him down any, going tight and fast the way you sometimes have to when you're in a rush, because Trent knows how to do that. He's done it to himself.
"Fuck," Ted says again, partly to tease, but mostly because that's the best word he can think of.
Trent's hand is broad and warm, and Ted's so close already, worked up and wrung out, just aching for it.
"Trent, please, I'm..."
"Shh," says Trent, and puts his other hand over Ted's mouth, that wicked little gleam in his eye.
"Quiet, Ted. Your neighbors might hear."
It's pretty much the hottest thing Ted's ever had done to him, and he comes in three hot pulses, everything in his body contracting and releasing all at once. Trent keeps hold of him through it, watching him with his mouth open a little like it's something to see. Like Ted's something to see. Ted lets go of Trent's butt with some regret, but as much as he admires Trent's dexterity in doing all of that one-handed, he needs both of them for this. He manages to get Trent's pants undone and shoved down to his thighs. Trent goes in for the briefs line, his cock making a dark wet spot in the navy cotton. Ted's mouth waters in a way he'll have to circle back around to later. Maybe move blowjobs up a little bit on the to-try list he's been compiling in his head. For now, he just pushes the briefs down as far as they'll go, and then he's got his hands on Trent before his brain catches up to the fact that he's touching someone else's dick for the first time. He doesn't want to freeze, but was he supposed to do that? Trent has a foreskin. It feels different, the skin softer. Is there another way you're supposed to jerk off someone with a foreskin? Was that in the textbook? Or maybe he's supposed to blow him? Or should he have been jerking Trent off at the same time?
"Ted," says Trent, carefully taking his hand out of Ted's boxers and carding his other hand through Ted's hair. "It's all right if you're not..."
"Tell me what to do," says Ted, remembering just in time to keep his voice down.
"I want to, but I'm..."
"Tell me what I need to do here."
Trent smiles, but he still doesn't look totally on board.
"You don't need to do anything," he says, which is a pretty impressive complete sentence when his cock is hot and hard in Ted's hands.
Ted narrows his eyes.
"Should I say fuck again?" he asks, and squeezes a little. Maybe Trent knows all about gay sex, but Ted has a pretty good idea how to get his attention. Okay, Trent says, on a gasp, his hand in Ted's hair tightening. All right, just stay like that. And he moves his hips forward and back, his cock moving along Ted's fingers and palms with a faint wet noise that Ted's going to be thinking about a lot. Oh, just like that, he sighs, letting his eyes drift closed. Ted watches him, watches the line of his neck and the arch of his back, the furrow of his brow, the flex of his legs. He's beautiful, and Ted realizes he's saying that over and over again, quietly in rhythm. Beautiful, beautiful. Trent opens his eyes and stares down at him, still holding tight, and then he slips two of his fingers into Ted's mouth, salty with... It's Ted's own cum, he realizes. It's him on Trent's fingers, and that's enough to get him twitching all over again. He swallows the taste of it, wants to put Trent's whole hand in his mouth and lick up every trace. Trent pushes his fingers further in, and Ted bites at the knuckle, wanting more, wanting everything. Oh, God, says Trent, and comes all over Ted's t-shirt in his hands, his grip in Ted's hair just this side of painful. He looks wrecked, and Ted wants to give himself a little pat on the back for that. Although, not just this second. He carefully lets go and wipes his hands on his shirt, figuring it's a loss anyway. Trent is still balanced on top of him, breathing hard. So, asks Ted, not even bothering to hide how smug he's feeling, putting one arm behind his head. Did you like that? Trent laughs, quiet and pure and beautiful, and says, I did. Thank you. Still, they're not really dating. At least, not as Ted's ever understood the term, the dinner-in-a-movie type of dating. Sundays are usually spent with Trent and Serafina at their place, playing hide-and-seek or chasing her around the backyard or playing Super Mario 3 Classic and arguing about where the special shortcuts are while she cheers them on. Trent's right more often than Ted, and never lets him forget it. Ted heads home after dinner, kissing Serafina goodbye on the top of her head if she's still awake, and Trent goodbye with a lot of tongue if she isn't. On weekdays after work, at least on those rare occasions when neither of them have a game to coach or cover and Trent's not on dad duty, he'll come over to Ted's place. They still go slow, but most nights involve at least an orgasm each, and Ted's kind of alarmed at how each one gets better. He's pretty sure he's got a lot of catching up to do. But Trent doesn't seem to mind, never worried about it, always easy. Always what? He asks, laughing even as he's pushing Ted away. Explain yourself. I don't mean easy, like, I just mean you're always a sure thing, says Ted. You're not making this better, says Trent, narrowing his eyes. They're making out in Ted's bedroom early in the evening, before Trent's got to go back out and cover a game for Crystal Palace, and Ted's worried that between the time they have left and his logorrhea, nobody's getting a hand on anybody's dick tonight. I mean, he says, trying to figure out the right words, I always got anxious about this before. I never knew if I was supposed to want it or to be disappointed if I wasn't getting it, or if whoever I was with might not want it, or wanted it more than me, or... But with you, he's not getting this out well, but Trent's still waiting for him, a smile on his face. You always want this as much as I do, and I'm not, you know, messing it up. Except for right now, this moment, I am most definitely messing it up, I'm aware. You most definitely are, Trent agrees, and grabs him by the collar to pull him back down. They end up with two very nice orgasms, one apiece, and Trent has to take the stairs two at a time to run and catch a cab. But as incoherent as Ted maybe had been, it's true. Trent doesn't ever seem to get tired of touching him, of pulling him closer, even though Ted suspects that they've set themselves a glacial pace by most standards. But he doesn't care. He's got good company. He just wishes there was a better term for what they were doing. Google ain't helping neither, he complains a few days later, perched on Trent's kitchen counter while Trent messes around throwing out the takeout boxes. It seems like popcorn is pretty much the limit of Trent's culinary expertise, although he does make a pretty good ice cream sundae. Serafina's already asleep in her room upstairs, after they took turns reading a half dozen Little Miss books to her. Nobody's thought up a more elegant term than hand job? What more elegant term did you have in mind? Trent asks, pulling the trash bag out and tying it shut. Ted hops off the counter and gets out a fresh liner, putting it in while Trent takes everything out to the trash cans outside. He steals a couple bites of Trent's still unfinished sundae and scrolls through some of the euphemisms, getting more and more horrified until Trent comes back. Listen to this one, a hand shandy, he says, as Trent eats the rest of his dessert with a suspicious squint at Ted. Sounds like a drink, or, good lordy, a five-fingered slippy? That's awful. And what on earth is... At which point, Trent physically wrestles Ted's phone out of his hands and kisses him to shut him up, his mouth cold and vanilla sweet. Would you like to try something other than hand jobs? He asks. Ted would like that very much, but he has to ask. Does it have a better name than hand jobs? Decidedly not, Trent says, eyes sparkling. So, Ted gets to spend the following night learning about frottage, something even more fun to do than it is to say, if Trent would get through the whole instructional video. Now, silicone lubricant is a bit messier, he says, standing by Ted's bed and waving around a fancy-looking tube. He's not undressed, but he's pretty comprehensively unbuttoned and unbuckled, and Ted was looking forward to the evening's activities until Trent got on a roll here. But it lasts quite a bit longer than the water-based lubricants we've been using for... Ted's about to fall asleep with an erection for, well, not the first time in his life, but the first time in a while. Trent... I am familiar with lube, he says, as patient as he can. Can you please just get over here? I want to make sure you enjoy yourself, says Trent, even as he finally crawls on top of him, squirting some of the lube into his hand. I'm pretty sure I will if you just stop with the seminar, Ted says. He's right, too. He loves it, loves the way Trent pushes him around where he wants him, spreading Ted's legs wide or wrapping them around his waist, like he wants to get things perfect. Ted doesn't even have to do anything, just lie there and feel it, kissing and stroking when and where he wants. He's never had sex like this, sex that quiets him down and fills him up all at once. It's like some kind of refuge he has under Trent's body, under his hands, a shelter he's never known existed. He's not always sure what he can offer in return, But it turns out Trent's not that demanding. Ted finds all sorts of ways to please him, to touch him. One of his favorite places on Trent's body turns out to be the nape of his neck. Ted likes the ceremony of kissing him there, pushing his hair gently out of the way as though it's a secret spot just for the two of them. Trent always sighs when he does it, bending his head down further, supplication and demand that Ted gets hooked on real fast. The road to gay sex nirvana isn't always smooth sailing. There's that time Ted falls clean off the couch mid-stroke, or the nasty bruise on Trent's thigh that he gets from colliding with the bedpost instead of the bed. Ted has a bad moment the first time they try getting completely naked. It's not a full-blown panic attack, not like that night in Liverpool, but there's a ringing in his ears and his hands won't work right. He grits his teeth because he wants this. He does. It's just he can't make his heart stop slamming up against his ribcage like it's dying to jump clean out of his body. Trent, still wearing his pants, sits back on his heels and gets off the bed, probably disgusted, probably tired of having to deal with Ted's weird hang-ups, and Trent picks Ted's undershirt from off the floor and holds it by the hem at the bottom, nudging at him until he lets Trent slip the shirt back on. Ted gets his arms through while Trent pads out to the kitchen, coming back with a glass of water. He hands it to Ted and climbs back in bed, wrapping his long arms around him with his chin on Ted's shoulder. He doesn't say anything, which makes it better and worse all at the same time. "I'm sorry," says Ted, drinking small sips. He shuts his eyes. He doesn't want to throw up. "You've done nothing that requires apology." Trent doesn't say anything else, just holds him close, his freezing cold feet tucked under Ted's thighs. Ted keeps his eyes closed and listens to himself breathe, feels the beat of Trent's heart against his back. The next Sunday, when Ted goes up to Notting Hill, Trent's by himself. "Her grandparents took her to Legoland," he says, before Ted can even ask, and takes Ted upstairs to his bedroom. Ted's been in here a couple times, but never in the afternoon light, spilling in from the windows onto the wide bed underneath. He stands in the doorway for a minute, while Trent goes to one of the bedside tables and sets his glasses down, unclasps his watch, and tugs off the hair tie he's always got around his other wrist. He turns to Ted, and Ted feels the pull of him, like an anchor in a storm. Trent lets Ted strip him down, piece by piece, until he's lying naked on the bed, then pulls Ted down to lie beside him. They spend almost an hour like that, with Ted just touching him. A part of him tries insisting that he ought to feel guilty for this, ashamed for being such a wuss when Trent is too patient already, but it's swallowed up by the feel of Trent's chest hair, the mole on his stomach that makes him breathe in sharp when Ted brushes against it, the bump of his kneecap and the roughness of the soles of his feet. Ted touches him and can't be anything less than grateful at his luck, blinking away the sting in his eyes at how close he came to missing all of this. They learn more about each other, sharing their history and their phobias and their favorite music. Trent loves Ella Fitzgerald and Pete Townsend. He'll tolerate Kenny Rogers, but draws a firm line at Jimmy Buffett. Sadly for him, Serafina turns out to be a born parrot head, which may or may not be down to Ted sneaking in listening sessions with her whenever Trent's back is turned. Ted gets a text from Trent one day while he's at work. It's a video of Trent glaring ferociously at the camera, while Serafina marches back and forth behind him, yelling,
Sorti for my sickness out.
Over and over again. That almost makes me like him, Rebecca admits when he shows it to her. Almost. She purses her lips and hands him back the phone. Don't push it. Ted learns more about FIFA scandals than he ever thought he would, because it turns out Trent's writing yet another book, this time about Sepp Blatter, who Ted refuses to believe is a real person for almost a week. It's kind of neat to watch Trent working on something longer than an article or a match report. He gets wrapped up in it, printing out chapters to mark up and chewing absently on his pen while he mutters to himself, running his hand through his hair every 30 seconds until he gets sick of it and pulls it back, then getting annoyed with that and pulling out the hair tie. Ted just keeps bringing him coffee on days when he's doing his revisions, although he does mandate breaks for making out. He also gets to guide Trent through a traumatic 48-hour saga after Serafina breaks his glasses right in half while trying to get them to fit her face. Getting a new pair of glasses is, apparently, out of the question. You don't just throw something like this away because it's been broken, Trent says, squinting at the superglue instructions, the broken glasses forlorn on the kitchen table in front of him. Here, read this. My daughter has destroyed my eyesight, and I'll be taking her to the orphanage tomorrow. That'll require you to read Google Maps directions, so I'm guessing you'll have to wait until you get new glasses. I won't need new glasses if I fix these, Trent hisses, snatching the bottle back. And I would think you, of all people, would appreciate repairing and not replacing. Ted sighs and gets up, kissing the top of his head as he goes to get a beer. Trent, they are busted. I don't know what else to tell you. It's not like that time I sewed up the seam in your jacket. These ain't coming back together with thread or superglue or a miracle from heaven. You need to Marie Kondo these things, thank them for their service, and toss them. Which goes down about as well as a suggestion to Willie Nelson that he ease up on the Mary Jane. In the end, Ted finds identical frames on eBay, right down to the serial number, and has them rush delivered. He even takes them to Trent's optometrist to get the right lenses put in. However, his plan to present them to Trent that night and get some thank you sex out of it gets derailed when Trent instead launches into a big old lecture about the fast fashion industry and how wanton consumerism will destroy the planet and that replacing perfectly good glasses is, somehow, fascism. Perfectly good glasses that were in two pieces, Ted points out as patiently as he can. But, Trent seems to run out of steam. Fine. Thank you, he sighs, in that reluctant way he sometimes gets that makes Ted want to strangle him and snuggle him at the same time. You're welcome. Trent puts the new glasses on and makes a face, even though they're exactly the same as his old ones. But then they have sex anyway, and Trent even keeps them on, which Ted didn't know he was into but is glad for the discovery. Afterward, Trent settles down on top of him for a little while and they talk about getting Serafina her own set of glasses. She just wants to be like her daddy, says Ted, running his finger gently along the earpiece. Don't even have to put lenses in them, probably. Good thing, too. The last time she got hold of mine, she tried to clean them and I had to replace the lenses. At great expense. Yeah, your eyesight's pretty pricey, Ted agrees. But how'd she ruin the lenses by cleaning them? Trent squeezes his eyes shut, clearly pained just by the memory. She cleaned them with a rock. They learn other stuff, too,
favorite takeout foods. Trent's is Ethiopian and so is Ted's, once he tries it, mostly because English pizza is truly god-awful. How they like their morning drinks. Trent prefers coffee too, although he's got a tolerance for tea that baffles Ted. Political leanings, even though they don't always translate. Ted learns a lot about Brexit and why some of Trent's articles get people writing angry emails about how Trent should leave his bloody Ramoner shite out of football, and dozens of other little factoids about each other. But most of what Ted seems to be learning about is himself. Or maybe it's himself when he's with Trent. He's still not sure what names fit him best now, but he doesn't feel so much anxiety over it. He's 45 years old. Searching for definitions doesn't feel so urgent when he has so many other things to do. Winning games, and helping out his guys, and mapping out the freckles on Trent's back, and debating with Serafina over which stuffed animal she'll sleep with tonight, and watching Henry's baseball game through a crappy video call so he can cheer along with Michelle when their son gets up to bat. He's worried most of the time, exhausted all the time. It's hard work and hard to keep everything going. But it gets easier whenever he reaches out and finds Trent waiting for him, ready to hold on.
"So when do I get to take you out?" asks Ted. Or at least he tries to. There's a lot going on. He's straddling Trent's lap, with Trent sprawled back on Ted's couch looking up at him with some serious Bette Davis eyes. He made Trent dinner tonight, and Roy was right. That chicken cordon bleu recipe really got Trent all hot and bothered. Between that and the yoga classes he recommended, Ted needs to get Roy a gift basket or something.
"Out?" asks Trent, holding onto Ted's hips and gently pulling and pushing at him, building a rhythm that he seems happy to keep going indefinitely. Ted got rid of his tie earlier and mussed him up a little, and looking down at him now, he thinks that that Bridgerton show missed casting a good-looking baron or duke or something. Nobody's pants have come off just yet, but Ted has high hopes.
"Yeah, on a date. You heard of them?" It's getting harder and harder to talk as he gets, well, harder and harder. Trent looks as relaxed as ever, except for the way he's breathing, the hitch in his chest that lets Ted know that he's enjoying himself. Ted feels kind of self-conscious. He's never been the one on somebody else's lap like this. But watching Trent watch him is worth any awkwardness. Ted already knows he'll do a lot of things to get Trent Crim's attention.
"This isn't a date?" Trent asks, raising his eyebrows. "Seems to fill a number of prerequisites."
"Well, there was dinner," Ted agrees, "and part of a movie." This has the anticipated effect of making Trent scowl and try to sit up, the better to argue that the Bring It On franchise is yet another example of American cinema not just beating a dead horse, but turning it into some kind of zombie horse to lumber onward endlessly. Ted might be paraphrasing here. Like he did for a good 15 minutes before Ted turned off the TV and crawled into his lap. Which might have been Trent's plan to begin with. He's crafty like that.
"I meant go out, like on a date. As in a restaurant, or a carriage ride through the park, or, I don't know, you like opera? We could go to the opera."
"Ted, have you ever been to the opera?" Trent asks. And now that he's sitting up, he wraps his arms around Ted's waist, so they're up close and personal. Ted moves his hips again, trying it out, and Trent's arms tighten. That's a good sign. He tries to remember what Trent asked him.
"I saw Hamilton last summer on Disney Plus. That count?"
"Absolutely not," says Trent.
and lifts his face up to kiss him. Ted's really loving these kisses, the way Trent is sweet and mean in turns. It's like a game. It's kind of like soccer, actually. Nothing Ted's ever played, but he's having a lot of fun learning. He also knows when Trent's trying to duck an issue, and the last few weeks or so, he's added making out with Ted Lasso to his methods of ducking said issues. So Ted's got to be the one to keep them on track. "Trent, I'm serious. Let me take you out." That stops the kissing, which is a shame. Trent frowns up at him. "I don't think that's a good idea." Some of Trent's hair's fallen into his face, and Ted combs his fingers through it. Honestly, he'll take any excuse to stick his hands right in there. "What, you worried about being seen with me?" he teases, tucking it behind Trent's ear. "Yes," Trent says, right off the bat, like he doesn't even have to think about it, which is a little hurtful. But he turns to press his mouth against Ted's palm, his hands big and warm on Ted's back, keeping Ted in place, right where he's supposed to be. "I'm a well-known football journalist, and you're a well-known football manager, and until recently I was covering your team. Being seen together in public, romantically, will have repercussions." "Repercussions like what?" Ted asks. Rebecca's warnings are already rising to the surface, though. Like all those dead fish after Jean Komblowski threw that stick of dynamite in the lake their sophomore year. "We didn't start anything until after you stopped covering Richmond. You told your bosses before you told me, remember?" "Vividly," says Trent, biting back a smile before his face gets serious again. "But that won't matter. Not to the press." "Aren't you part of the press?" Ted asks. "There's a badge with a lanyard over there somewhere and everything." "Yes, which is why they'll probably be even more vicious," Trent says. And, yep, Rebecca had said that too. "We're not nice people." "Oh, I'm aware. I saw that documentary about Princess Diana," says Ted. "But it's gotta happen sooner or later, right? We can't just stay in here forever." Trent swallows, breaking eye contact. "No, we can't." "So what's this really about?" Ted says, because he's pretty sure it's about something. Trent sighs and leans forward until his forehead is pressed up against Ted's chest. "This is still very new to you, Ted," he says, his voice vibrating up Ted's sternum in a way that's kind of distracting, but he tries to focus. "I can't expect you to take on the burden of coming out and revealing a boyfriend at the same time, especially without..." "Boyfriend?" Ted says, perking right up. He puts his hands on Trent's shoulders and pushes him back far enough to look him in the eye. "You know, you've been teaching me a lot of new terminology, but this is the first time that word's come up." Trent's face is a real study, a mix between abashed and amused and kind of terrified. "I apologize. I didn't mean..." "You absolutely did mean," Ted says, and kisses him. Not one of the biting ones, but softer, sweeter. "And for the record, yes, I liked that." He manages a dismount without kneeing Trent in the groin and offers his hand. When Trent takes it, Ted pulls him close. Close enough that Trent goes just a little bit cross-eyed, trying to focus without his glasses. It's the cutest dang thing, and Ted's never telling him about it. "How about I show you how much I liked it?" They manage to get most of their clothes off by the time they get to the bedroom, and Ted gets the thrill of being the one to push Trent down on the bed for once. All right, I've read the whole blowjob chapter. This running textbook joke you have isn't nearly as amusing as you think it is, says Trent, but he's grinning at the same time. Rule number two, you gotta be honest, Ted reminds him, and grabs a pillow for his knees, kneeling down next to the mattress. Trent obligingly arranges himself in front of him, his cock already hard and leaking just a little, and Ted grabs the lube from the nightstand. And I happen to know you think I'm hilarious. You bought Lubido Intimate Lubricant, Trent says, gesturing at the bottle, with a dispenser pump. I do think you're hilarious, but perhaps not quite the way you think you're hilarious. This is not the kind of encouragement I was hoping to get for my first blowjob, Trent, Ted says, making a big disappointed face as he gets some lube into his hands and wraps it around Trent's cock. Trent's hips twitch upward, and his mouth shuts with a snap. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. He slides his hand up and down a few times, just savoring it. He loves doing this, truth be told, loves having all his attention focused on what Trent wants, what he needs. Ted had plans to pace himself here, see what he was comfortable with, but what if instead? Jesus Christ, says Trent, which sounds positive. Good thing, too, because Ted's got Trent's cock in his mouth and doesn't want to stop anytime soon. It's bigger than he was expecting, slick with the lube and pre-cum and sweet sour on his tongue. Ted shuts his eyes and just lets himself go, pressing down until he can't get any further, and he wants to stay there forever, breathing hard through his nose as Trent slides his hands into his hair, fingernails scratching. He's saying something, but Ted can't really hear. It feels quiet and peaceful and... All right, Trent says, a little louder, and the hands in his hair are pulling him off. As gratifying as it is to watch you choke on my cock, I do need you to breathe. The most annoying thing about Trent is his ability to talk in complete sentences when he's about 2 seconds away from coming, and Ted tells him so. Thank you for your feedback, Trent says, and guides Ted right back onto his cock. Finally. Ted loses himself to the feeling, the slippery too much of Trent's cock and the tense muscles of his thighs under Ted's hands, smell of him all around, the ache in Ted's knees even with the pillow, the stretch of his jaw, the sting of tears at the corner of his eyes as he tries to get more, further, anything. Trent says something else and tugs at his hair again, but it's not fast enough. Ted almost inhales as Trent's cum fills his mouth, salt bitter and warm. He pulls away and coughs, wiping at his mouth and checking to see if Trent's all right. He's pretty sure he didn't catch him with his teeth, but it's startling when somebody comes halfway down your throat. That was, Trent says. He doesn't actually follow it up with an adjective, though. Look, I'll work on it, says Ted, only to get hauled up into bed alongside his boyfriend. Trent eyes him appraisingly. Ted's got no idea how he gets more wound up after sex. It was a remarkably good first effort, Trent tells him. But allow me to give you some advice. What did you have? Ted shuts up because Trent leans over and licks a long stripe up from the root to the tip of his dick, then sucks the head into his mouth, and Ted just has to lie there and take lessons, as it were, from the master. Trent keeps it going for longer than he did, backing off just when Ted's about to really lose his mind, letting him settle a bit before getting him going again. When he finally comes, it's like a long inhale after holding your breath, sweet and necessary in making you tingle down to the tips of your toes. He lies there just basking, spread-eagled on the bed with, he realizes, his undershirt and one sock still on. Trent, sitting up to lean over him, is completely naked, and Ted slides his hand up Trent's inner thigh to let his fingers brush against the hair at his groin. Trent inhales sharply, but he doesn't seem to mind it. "Thoughts?" he asks Ted, as arch as any time he'd asked that same question in the press room. "Well, it was a remarkably good first effort," Ted says, or tries to, because Trent scowls at him and gets out of bed. "You'd best have a spare toothbrush, Coach Lasso," he says. "Otherwise, I'm using yours." "After what we just did, that seems fine," Ted calls after him, and grabs his boxers from the floor to put them back on. By the time he gets to the bathroom, Trent has indeed found the spare toothbrush. He notices Ted's wardrobe change and raises an eyebrow, but doesn't say anything. Ted gets his own toothbrush, and they have an interesting toothpastey discussion about the etiquette and hygiene of oral sex, which Ted should pay attention to, but he gets distracted by the goosebumps along Trent's shoulders and arms, so he pulls his bathrobe off the peg and holds it up for Trent to get into. Trent pauses in the middle of whatever he was saying about perineums and spits into the sink, putting his toothbrush down on the counter. Ted helps him put it on and finishes his own routine while Trent ties the belt. "You look good in that," Ted says, "although I do prefer the birthday suit, but this is less likely to give you pneumonia." "I'm not going to get pneumonia in your bathroom," Trent says, but he kisses Ted softly, and Ted's about 5 seconds away from proposing a round two, however futile, when he remembers Trent had been saying something earlier, and not just about taints. "Without what?" he asks, with some difficulty because Trent's going for a hickey on his collarbone. Ted wants to encourage that, but he also wants to finish the conversation. "What?" Trent mumbles against his neck. "Before, when we were talking, you said you didn't expect me to come out and tell everybody about my boyfriend," he draws the word out a little, mostly to watch Trent squirm, but also because he really does like it, "without something." "Oh, yes, before you interrupted me by letting me fuck your face," Trent says, making a big show out of remembering. This leads to another digression while they hash out the exact definition of face-fucking, which by the end of it, Ted's pretty sure they didn't do, and also pretty sure he'd like them to do. Trent's the one who gets them back on track after that. "I was going to say, I don't expect you to come out publicly without first telling those closest to you." He picks up his toothbrush and, after a second, puts it in the toothbrush mug. "Oh, most of them know," Ted assures him, washing off his toothbrush and reaching around Trent to put it away. Trent catches his wrist and takes the toothbrush out of his hand, putting it in the mug himself, before turning Ted to fully face him. "Most of whom?" he asks, looking very suspicious. Ted shifts back a little, wondering if he should offer Trent his other wrist. "Well, Beard, of course, Rebecca, some of my other friends at the clubhouse, Michelle, obviously. We haven't talked to Henry yet, but she got him a bunch of books about, you know, divorced parents and if they started dating other people.
There's one about gay penguins, too, which Henry's been asking me a lot of pointed questions about, but I think he's hoping I'm dating Beard, so we might need to let him down easy about that.
So most of AFC Richmond and the entirety of Kansas are aware, says Trent. He leans back against the counter and, sadly, lets go of Ted's wrist. He looks like one of those spinny wheels on the computer when a program crashes.
And none of them have leaked anything to the press?
I think you're overestimating how interesting we are, Ted says.
Perhaps. Trent's brain is clearly still going a mile a minute.
Haven't you told any of your friends?
That brings Trent back a little.
I think you're overestimating how many people I like, he says.
Besides, it seemed like tempting fate a bit.
Ted sighs. You're just determined that this toast is going to land jelly side down, aren't you? He says, tugging on a lock of Trent's hair that's fallen across his forehead.
Get dust bunnies and dirt on it and everything.
That metaphor is disgusting, says Trent, but there's not a lot of heat to it.
I suppose I just don't want you announcing anything before you're ready.
That sounds an awful lot like before I'm ready too, Ted points out.
I'm not afraid of this, Trent says, just a little too emphatic about it.
Never said you were, Ted says. But are there people you'd like to tell? Before we present ourselves formally to the Queen or whatever it is y'all do here?
Trent gives him a flat look, but gets distracted by the actual question.
I suppose you ought to meet Serafina's grandparents, he says.
My in-laws, that is to say.
Yes, I probably ought to, Ted says, as quick as he can without seeming too quick about it, although he probably botches it up. And your parents, too, if you want.
My parents already approve of you far too much, Trent says dryly.
But that will have to wait until after the season, I'm afraid. They don't travel up to London except in direst emergency, and they've told me unequivocally that my handsome chap doesn't qualify.
Ted likes Trent's parents already.
Okay, then. After the season.
Trent frowns. I really do think
this whole conversation is starting to ruin Ted's afterglow.
Trent Krim, I am ready to tell people that I'm your boyfriend, and more importantly, that you're my boyfriend, he announces, putting his arms around Trent's shoulders. But if you're not, or not yet, then how about we follow rule number one and take it slow, all right? And make a plan.
I'm listening, Trent says, dubious. But he's squeezing Ted's butt, so that's nice.
Ted thinks about it for a second, buying time by readjusting the lapels on his bathrobe.
Trent does look very, very good in it.
All right. Step one, you introduce me to the in-laws, see what they think. Step two, we'll go have drinks with Beard and Higgins, see what they think.
I'd venture to guess they think I'm an arsehole who doesn't deserve you, says Trent mildly.
That's not... No. Yeah, that's a fairly accurate summation, Ted has to admit. But this is your chance to change some hearts and minds.
And hey, betting the in-laws aren't my biggest fans neither.
Trent makes a harumphing sort of noise, so Ted kisses him and tries to remember what step they were on.
So, yeah, when all of that goes great, I'll make us reservations somewhere fancy, one of those places that has the tire store stars. He draws a little star in the air with his finger. Michelin stars, Trent corrects him, with the kind of despairing tone that Ted loves to get out of him. Ted smiles and gives him a kiss on the forehead as a reward. That's it, and we'll go have a nice dinner and maybe go see a play. That's a thing here, right? The West End and all that jazz? Ooh, is that Mousetrap play still going? Christ, Trent mutters, and drags him back to bed. Part one of their plan almost derails the whole dang thing, because Trent's in-laws more or less hate him on sight. Ted can't even blame them. It starts out okay. He heads over the next Sunday a few hours early, with the stack of Bunnicula easy-to-read books that had finally arrived. The plan is to meet Faye and Luke Turner when they drop Serafina off and charm their socks off with his friendly demeanor and dedication to reading. I think you may be overestimating the degree to which their socks can be charmed, Trent warns him, but he's impressed with the books, at least. She's still a bit young, but she'll like the pictures. Then the in-laws call up saying they'll be an hour or so late, which means Ted and Trent have at least an hour all to themselves. One thing leads to another, which leads up to the bedroom, and Ted gets to find out whether or not he actually does like it when Trent fucks his face. Answer, yes, and boy howdy. Trent's also a big fan, if the way he loudly comes down Ted's throat is any indication, and hauls him up by the hair to kiss him, filthy and delicious. He then shoves Ted flat on his back and sucks him down like an Olympic champion. Ted's so wound up that he lasts about 30 seconds. But they're a very good 30 seconds. Just as Trent flops back on the bed next to him, both of them still breathing hard, the front door opens. An older woman's voice, an American one, says, "Trent! Trent, are you here?" There's more voices. An older British guy and Serafina chattering away about something. "Shit!" whispers Trent, lunging off the bed and making a grab for his pants. "I ought to have known that an hour late would mean 20 minutes early." "Just a moment, Faye," he adds, calling that last part down the stairs. Faye, a.k.a. Trent's sort of in-laws, a.k.a. shit. Ted sits up, adrenaline pumping. "Should I hide under the bed," is what he wants to suggest, but that didn't work in high school, and it probably won't work now. "Oh, God, I..." Trent crashes into the bathroom and swigs some mouthwash while he paws at his clothes, getting them more or less back on the way they're supposed to be. "They're expecting to meet you, so our options are to pretend you're not here and that you stood them up, admit you were here but pretend we were looking at etchings, or admit that you're here and we were having sex. You could always get them into the kitchen. I can sneak out and ring the doorbell," Ted says, getting himself re-zipped and re-buttoned while Trent ties up his hair. "That way they..." "Trent," says the lady from downstairs, "is your friend here? There's a coat left lying on the sofa. And some books," she adds in kind of a judgy tone. Trent closes his eyes. "Into the Valley of Death rode the 600, he mutters, then points at Ted. "Give me a few minutes. Make yourself presentable." "Hey," says Ted feelingly, but Trent just grins at him and gives him a kiss that flattens him right back down on the bed before disappearing out the door and down the stairs. Ted does his best on the presentable front, washing his face and using Trent's mouthwash. He looks around for a brush to get his hair in some semblance of order after Trent had his way with it, but it's definitely been a few minutes by now, and since Trent's bed doesn't have enough room for him to hide under it, he goes downstairs. Serafina's in the living room with Peppa Pig playing on the TV and the Manicula books in her lap, leafing happily through the pictures. She pays him no mind when he kisses her on the top of her head, so he ventures into the kitchen. The in-laws are sitting at the table while Trent's fussing around with tea things at the counter. As soon as they see Ted, the temperature goes down to Arctic levels. "Hi there," he says, waving at them like an idiot. Trent smiles at him, at least. "Luke, Faye, this is Ted Lasso. Ted, Serafina's grandparents. Luke and Faye Turner." "So," says Mr. Turner, looking more hostile than Baz on a bad night, "you're Richmond's infamous new manager. We've heard a lot about you." Clearly, they'd like to hear less. Ted glances over at Trent, who's rubbing at his eyebrows, and tries for a folksy smile. "Pleasure to meet you both," he says, offering his hand. "You've got a lovely granddaughter." "We've already met," said Mrs. Turner as she shakes it. "You were Rebecca Welton's date to the RSPCA gala in November, weren't you?" Her accent's hard to place, but he doesn't need any help reading her attitude. "Well, I'm always willing to help out in the plus one department," he says, and wonders what the hell he even just said. "And Rebecca's a good friend." "I'm sure," says Mrs. Turner. "He was the one who helped me track down Serafina after she ran off," Trent supplies as he hands out the tea. He's even busted out the actual cups with the saucers. Ted's no expert on British family politics, but that's probably a bad sign. "Ah, yes," says Mr. Turner. "When you disappeared for the last half of the event and then went home before we could say goodnight to our granddaughter." "Don't you want some tea, Ted?" asks Mrs. Turner. "Oh, Ted doesn't," says Trent, at the same time as Ted says, "Absolutely, that'd be peachy," which is around the same time that Ted notices the hickey on Trent's neck. After a hugely uncomfortable 15 minutes, where Ted has to drink an actual cup of actual dirty leaf water, the Turners head out, giving Serafina hugs and checking with Trent's schedule for the next week in low voices at the front door. Ted cowers in the kitchen for a little bit and only creeps in as far as the kitchen doorway, watching them maneuver around each other in the living room. There's a kind of rhythm to it, and he wonders how much he's throwing everything out of whack. They say goodbye, although they don't mention that it was nice meeting Ted, probably because it wasn't. Trent shuts the front door and leans heavily against it, his forehead thudding against the wood. "That could have gone worse," Ted offers. Trent twists around, still slumped. "Faye just asked me if your mustache was real or something you'd found in a costume shop," he says. Then Luke said, given how much Listerine he could smell, "Surely a fake one would have come off during our recent activities." "So, probably couldn't have gone worse then," Ted concludes sadly. Trent chuckles and pushes himself off the door. "Think of it this way," he says, coming over to give him a kiss on the cheek. "At least you didn't spit on them." I feel like that's such a low bar I may just trip over it one of these days, Ted confesses and kisses him back. They do smell a little like mouthwash, which at least is better than that god-awful tea. Trent indulges him for a few minutes, before pushing him toward the sofa. "All right, go explain this Bunnicula nonsense to Serafina. I'm making sandwiches for lunch and some coffee. I finally found that disgusting vanilla creamer you were on about the other day, so you should be happy. I am, says Ted, and sits down with Serafina to exclaim over the pictures of Harold and Chester and their little vampire bunny pal.